RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Friday morning, time for our political panel on RCR. The end of the week, always look forward to this. I want to welcome in Conservative commentator Elliot Ikele. Elliot, welcome.
Oh, g'day. Kia ora koutou, and always wonderful to be here.
He's got the high vis on. Why have you got the high vis on, Elliot? You're trying to be Trump.
Well, I'm ready to clean up the swamp. That's how we roll.
Okay, you're ready to go into work after this and do some real work. Okay. Marty Gibson, RCR. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Paul. How are things?
Yeah, not too bad. Made it through another week, you know. And Marie Buskey, RCR. Hi, Marie.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Not too bad, though I'm worried that the end of the world could be about to hit.
Not that you would know it. Not that you'd know it in the Herald or anything.
Well, no. Well, that's a very good question. How would you know? If there was a thermonuclear war on that scale, let's say in the Northern Hemisphere, it might creep down here. The thing that we would know is we don't know anything. No communication. Where are all the flights? They've all gone. That would be what it would be like. That's how we would find out.
Well, right? You'd have to, and to find it, you've got to sort of find this news. You've actually got to look into different pages or fall behind different elements.
No, I mean, if it happened.
Elements. Oh, if it happens, well, yeah.
I mean, there would be no news. No more news. You know.
Well, arguably, there's no news currently.
The reporting, or the lack of it, is incredible to me.
Yeah. I subscribe to the Epoch Times, which is American and conservative, but it covers a broad range of topics. And so this is where I've been tracking this. And the fact that Joe Biden came out, he toddled out. I mean, honestly, it looked like it did literally look like a weekend at Bernie's. They got him out. He finally gives this permission to the Ukrainians to fire these long-range missiles, and he's been saying no for years, literally the entire conflict. He's now said yes. They've now started lobbing these missiles. Keir Starmer's now jumped into the party, I see, and he's now also given permission for British-made
Storm
missiles to
Shadow.
Be fired. Honestly, I'm stunned at the lack of reportage in this part of the world. It was all hee-koi. And it's like, yes, I lever a lot of people that went for a bit of a drive.
Car-koi.
But this is massive. And I cannot fathom for the life of me why the media and our politicians are not more engaged with this, considering our relationship with NATO and how we could potentially be splattered in the splatter zone on all of this if it were to go south and go badly.
Yeah, you'd think there'd be some alert. I've been saying on this show that, it was a different era, different communication system, et cetera, but imagine if no one was told here that the Second World War had started. And we're all sitting here, butter and sheep and everything, and meantime. I mean, that would be, or that it was about to start, that would be the equivalent of this.
Well, there's the issue of the electromagnetic pulse, so it's a possibility it might knock out all satellites. But, yeah, it's thinking the unthinkable. I watched the Tucker Carlson interview with Glenn Greenwald, and if you haven't watched it, I'd recommend it. Jeffrey Sachs is also very interesting on it. But once you get some of that in-depth history into NATO creeping toward and finally into the Ukraine, and how the Americans knew it would trigger a Russian invasion, as if their CIA sponsoring a coup didn't in 2016. And now have newspapers still reporting it as Russian aggression, and we've got this terribly distorted idea, and as you say, our politicians going, yeah, we'll have to get Ukraine back on track.
And giving 100 million. There's a few hospitals.
Wings. Yeah, there. The Ukrainian ambassador, if Winston doesn't know which side we're on, Vasil Maroshenko, New Zealand's Ukrainian ambassador, certainly does. He thanks New Zealand very much for their $130 million in military-related aid and humanitarian assistance. Deployment of key New Zealand military personnel to train and otherwise support Ukraine.
By the way, we have no idea how that money was spent. I asked Winston. He couldn't give any line items. Nothing.
Oh, the graft is apparently just eye-watering.
We might
almost
as well have just probably burnt it.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, that's a fair enough point. If you're going to give money at that scale on behalf of the taxpayers of New Zealand, I want to see line item of expenditure. What's it for? Line by line, and it's got to add up to the amount, right?
People don't usually account for coke and hookers that diligently, but yeah, I get your point.
I think it's a pretty damn good point. Elliot, what do you got to say?
Well, you've already said a lot of what I wanted to say, which but I want to reiterate it. I want to. You've got Joe Biden, who is not just warmongering. He seems hell bent on sending, in his last act as president, sending the world into a World War III type spin. You've got the UK missiles that he used. You've got the US missiles that he's used. He's just had Joe Biden has now agreed to give Ukraine anti-personnel land mines. So they're arming them, and it's so blatant. I mean, it is shocking to the core that our politicians, our media, are not shouting us from the rafters and telling us what's going on. Why, like Maria was saying, why do we have to go and hunt this news? Shouldn't the Fourth Estate of New Zealand be telling us how close we are coming to the precipice of international war? This is some deeply chilling stuff going on here, and we don't seem to be facing on to know what's going on. It's extraordinary.
I mean, is there a plan? What if we don't get any diesel deliveries because it's all incinerated? I mean, how are we going to manage ourselves in that situation?
Well, and more than that too, it's the rallying of the allies. So the minute if there is a war and it does escalate to a world stage and everybody is forced to essentially take sides from one to another, well, then the BRICS nations will probably go in one direction and the Western canon around the United States will go into another. Well, that puts us up a shit China Creek without a paddle, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, not only that, but Maurice, how many of our people even know about the BRICS dynamic itself? You don't hear about BRICS going on in the New Zealand media. We have to go outsource that information. And yet this is things that will have intergenerational impact on our children and our children's children.
Well, you listen to Paul's interview with Jeremy Corbyn, and he said that BRICS
he was surgical, wasn't he, on that?
Yeah, singing from the same globalist song sheet as the Western nations. But, I mean, you know, with regard to what's happening in the Ukraine, I mean, you only need to imagine what happens if Russia arms Mexico and then gives them the satellite support to start launching missiles into the
U.S. Well, they won't do that, but it's an equivalent scenario, isn't it? That's the thing.
But if they did,
well, it'd be a Mexican missile crisis then, wouldn't it be?
I mean, Glenn Greenwald was saying that it's Anthony Blinken and Jake Sullivan who are driving this, and they have a lot of hostility toward Russia. Biden's not making decisions, neither is Kamala, and even Obama was realistic about Russia. So you've got this that military-industrial complex that knows that Trump's not for it, so they're preempting his arrival by starting a war.
And Marty and I talked about it yesterday too in Media Matters. Like when I spoke to Trevor Lardon, that he said that there would be something that the Democratic incumbents would do in this lame duck period in order to strengthen their position and put them in. If they're in a war-based footing, well, that transition of power come January 20 is not going to be smooth.
Yeah.
Politicians used to regularly speak with Russia because it kept them in touch with what was going on and how they were thinking things. Since Russiagate, Hillary, it became beyond the pale to speak with Russia. So they've just stopped talking to them. They don't really know what's going on with them. And because anyone who does is accused of being in league with them. It's a very, very strange situation.
I'd also like to know who are these decision makers, who are the whole, I mean, we all know here that Biden, that Harris are not in charge. They really aren't. They're not making these decisions. So I really would like to peek behind and see who is making these decisions. Is it
Anthony Blinken and Jake Sullivan, apparently?
Yeah, and I would say Mark Milley would be somewhere in that mix, wouldn't he?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's very reasonable, line of thought.
Raytheon, Boeing.
Yeah, but there's no point in pushing for a war, even if you're Raytheon and Boeing, if your entire business is going to be vaporized.
Yeah, but you also look at the other side. Who are the other ones that, I mean, I'm so often looking at the whole Cubono situation these days in terms of who benefits. Yeah, well, BlackRock, but also Halliburton. Who's behind Halliburton? Isn't that Cheney and Clinton and all their little merry band of fellows? So there's a lot of people that can make a lot of money out of a war.
Yeah, but they can't beat Russia, and the end game is everyone's dead. So what's the point? I just don't get it. Even if they had all the evil genius stuff going on, if what you set in motion ends up destroying you, what's the point?
Well, there's that faction who think of hawks at the Atlantic Council and so on, who think it's maybe tactical nukes are fine. You know, there is that school of thought in Washington. It's maybe we can just have a little nuclear war, just a little one, just a taste.
I actually don't think it'll get to that area. I think it'll be similar to, or I think perhaps the plan is similar to the African nations and the Middle Eastern nations, where devastation is caused, and then those other NGOs and the big business will roll in there, gain contracts for arms, for construction, for infrastructure, and they'll make a whole bunch of money in that regard, as well as any sort of tactical positioning that would start from the US. And it just seems to me, I don't know if, I don't subscribe to the shadowy figure behind, but I do think there's a machine that is happy or is okay with a war occurring, because it won't be a wipeout. We just don't see the wipeout type wars going on. But there'll be a lot of money and contracts available in the devastation that does occur.
If I was Putin, I'd wipe them out.
It's lucky you're not, Paul.
I've got to draw a line under this.
Yeah.
Well, so we're going to do it. You wanted it. You asked for it. Here it comes. You know.
Yeah. Well, the point that another point Glenn Greenwald made.
Maybe
was,
I wouldn't wipe them out. Maybe I'm walking that back now. But you know.
His point was the people. There's not a lot of opposition to the left of Putin. Most of the opposition he's got. He's not a monarch or anything. He does. He's very sensitive to how he's perceived. And most of the opposition to him is from extreme nationalists who think he's being too soft. So that's dangerous as well.
Mm. We live in, what's the word? I don't want to say interesting times.
Terrifying times?
Terrifying times, yeah. But I want to know, what's the plan? Oh, getting back to media and why it's not being reported. I can't believe I'm saying that. It can only be two reasons. They are so far up their own backsides that they can't even see it, which I just find really hard to believe, and politicians too. There's kind of a quiet agreement not to talk about this.
Well, remember what happened to the National reporter who adjusted the Reuters story to go, well, you know, this, you know, broke that convention of only starting the narrative at the moment that Putin invaded Ukraine, not with NATO originally, you know, the US saying, we won't move NATO an inch east, and then it's gone bop, bop, bop. 1999, they're bombing Kosovo for however many days to install a military base there because it's within reach. It's, once you really start looking at what's happened, the US doesn't come across as the good guy they'd like to be. And, you know, it's this is another point from that Tucker Carlson interview. If you listen to Putin's 2022 speech about why they invaded Ukraine, it's quite sympathetic. And you know, it's just like how they blocked introspection on 9/11 by saying, oh, they hate our freedoms. And then Osama bin Laden came out and said, well, it's your foreign policy, it's the bombing, it's the sanctions that cost the lives of 500,000 Iraqi children alone. It's the bases, it's your support of Israel. And apparently some millennials are starting to get hold of some of these things and share them on TikTok. Oh. They shut them down. They even got The Guardian to take that letter from Osama bin Laden down, even after it had been there for 20 years. And so, you know, he made the point that it's in the prelude to 1984, George Orwell, said that subtle repression with the illusion of freedom was far more effective than covert. other than overt oppression, where people at least know they're oppressed.
Yeah, and I think we're with them on that.
I'm catching up with the For the State in a couple of hours, and I'm going to be talking to Matt Robson. And Matt is actually Mick Hall's lawyer, who is the RNZ journalist. So we're going to be...
Didn't know that. Okay, yes. Now I'm listening. Now I'm listening.
Now you're listening, yeah. So we will be covering, you know, what happened to Mick. And just in my research and prep for that, I mean, Mick suffered a classic case of critical social justice cancellation. So there is a presiding narrative that goes across in multiple different industries, whether it be media or yarn or wherever it may be, education, academia, and there is this invisible set of rules bound by this social justice contract. And Mick accidentally set off one of these landmines, from what I can see. And in an interview I saw that he did do with another podcast, he then cited that part of the reason that he looked at anything coming down the wire is being from Belfast and from Northern Ireland, he was used to seeing actually bias that would come in, like from the likes of the BBC, based on the narrative, because often the narrative is set by the supposed victor, whoever holds the power. So he was always very wary of that, and that never to take whatever comes down the wire as God-given or the absolute fact. He made the point of doing his own fact-checking of whatever came down. And see, of course, doing your job, it appears, is enough to get you cancelled these days. So, you know, you can imagine from his perspective what a bomb from the blue that this would have been, to get a phone call and next minute you're out on your ear because you've done your job properly. And of course, this whole Russia was one of those invisible landmines.
Because obviously, I have an association with that entity that went for a long time, and I don't remember this individual. He might have come just a bit after me, but I can imagine what happened. So I'm wondering if he would have had the same heat on any other issue.
No, I don't think so. Just looking at it, because there is... And you often see this. There will be topics. That's where the invisible landmine comes in. Certain topics are just verboten. You know, they're off limits and you can't change the overriding narrative on that topic.
So why?
And Russia-Ukraine was one of them. Well, why? That is the $6 million question.
Does it come down from on high? Must do. How high? Maybe even above the pay grade of the guy who runs it, though he's on pretty good money because I know how much he gets paid.
The Pentagon budget is $1 trillion a year. That's plenty of motivation.
Yeah, but I can imagine a scenario. Paul Thompson. I know Paul Thompson. Speaking of real men, but I can just imagine how it went, that if you told him, we're not going there because foreign policy, money, everything, you wouldn't believe how messy it is for us. We're not going there. Last thing we want is your audience asking questions about this. So don't get there. Remember how much you paid. Remember.
Well, and it was triggered by a lawyer in New York who saw his article, made a complaint to Reuters about the article, and that's where the chain started. So, and of course, it doesn't take much. And I've learned this from the channel with cancellations, right? Yeah. Often it only takes the flimsiest of premise for somebody to end up being cancelled. So that lawyer in New York made a phone call to Reuters, which then checked with what was going on down here. There's a contract, apparently, a supposed contract, and I'm dying to ask Matt this, but apparently there was this contract and there was a breach of contract that Mick was supposed to have done in terms of changing what had come down on the wire. But funnily enough, no one that worked at RNZ has ever heard of or ever seen this contract.
Yeah.
So listen to the Fourth Estate. I'll see. Hopefully I can dig all of this up with Matt when I speak to him.
Yeah, but if it comes back to you after being heavied, we're not talking about this, okay? And then you get this in a roundabout way comes in and said, I told you we're not talking about this. Now you have to go into mode where you have to make it look like, you know, your editorial policies, we're going to examine this and we're going to get a big flap, performative flap.
Yeah. And this is why alternative media is not only surviving but thriving.
Yeah.
Because this is going on all the time in the legacy space, And you can't, you could get away with that form of censorship in the Fourth Estate when you only had the Fourth Estate.
Yep.
So prior to the Bay of Pigs, everything was in newspaper and radio. Then television came along. You had a television-ready president in the form of JFK. So everything then starts getting televised. You have war correspondents. They're setting vision back. Now you've got every single person has got a camera and the ability to record news in real time from multiple angles and have it up instantly. So you can't get away with it. This censorship, I don't think, is new. I think all of this suppression has been going on for absolute decades. But because of social media and the connectivity, just little citizen journalists have stopped it. They have stopped the lies. They've stopped the censorship and they've stopped the gaslighting.
So a lawyer in New York noticed it, but RNZ didn't notice it themselves. So again, you've got to ask another question.
Because, yeah.
What sort of editorial oversight is going on there? Because if you go into that much of a flap over this, yet you're napping at home, not noticing?
Well, no, it's not napping at home because he didn't actually do anything wrong, Paul. That's the thing.
I thought he altered copy.
Well, yeah, but the thing is it was at the time at RNZ, the copy had come down. It was standard practice that people would make slight changes or add context or extra information that copy to flesh it out.
Tweaking
and that's
it.
All he did. Yeah, and he didn't add anything to that copy that was not factual.
Yeah, it was that's very innocuous too, wasn't it? It was,
okay, well, that's flimsy as hell.
Yeah,
nail
it is.
Nail that sticks up gets hammered down, Paul. You would have learned that during your time there as well, right?
I've still got the hammer blow marks on the top of my head, metaphorically speaking. All right, anything more to say on Ukraine, how we're dealing with it, how it's being reported before we shift on?
My thing is I'm just waiting for Trump to take over. And when Trump takes over, I think I am just very much looking forward to adults being back in charge in the White House and more stability to engage with foreign affairs.
You'd think he would have picked up the phone to Putin and other world leaders, like going, hey, it's him, it's not me. It's all going to change. Just hang back, relax, something like that.
And that may have occurred. That may have occurred.
All right. Okay. Let's get on to the things here at home. Hikoi. What do we make of the hikoi? Who wants to start on the hikoi?
Oh, I'll jump in there.
I love your body language, Elliot. Sit up straight.
I'm ready for this.
I'm ready.
Coiled spring, go.
So, the Māori Party protest was, good on them. I'm glad that they had a great protest. It was a Māori Party protest. It wasn't about some sort of rights or anything like that. Probably the negatives that I have around it. Well, first off, the positives. It was well run. It was very friendly. It was organised, and that was good. And it did exactly as it planned. Now, it was a Māori Party protest. There's no doubt about it. The winners were, of course, David Seymour, who took a principled stance on it, and the Pāti Māori, who it was effectively. It really was. It was a recruitment drive. There's no doubt about that at all. That's what it was. Now, in terms of some things that I observed with it, was that not very few people knew what they were doing in there. The umbrella, definitely umbrella, is for our whānau, for our mokopuna, for our people against the rights being taken away, yada yada yada. But then when you ask, and I've done this asking, what specifically are you opposing in terms of the Treaty Principles Bill? I think it wasn't most. I think every single time I asked, I was not given a straight answer. There is no part of the Treaty Principles Bill that they could point to say this will have a negative impact upon Māori people or New Zealand for that matter. So they didn't really know what they were there for. It was great fun, lots of loudness, good on them, but it was a political movement. It supported Te Pāti Māori and it supported the ACT Party. I think the ones who are the losers out of this is the National Party. I think that Christopher Luxon, National Party, and specifically Christopher Luxon, because he looks afraid. He looks scared. And when he discusses it, when he's being brought up about it, he runs a million miles from it. We're only supporting to the first reading, with no more. Is there anything that you like in the bill? No discussion. No one talk about it. So even though this is actually one of the most important topics of our nation, the parliament that is led by the party, National Party, they don't want to touch it. They're afraid of it. They're scared of it. And they just want to stick to economics and crime. So good on the party, Māori Party, and good on ACT. They're the winners from it. But truth, not so much.
Scared of it? Scared of it?
Fear. Absolute fear.
Fear of what?
That's the question, isn't it? I think perhaps it's that natural risk adverse that a party might have.
You can't get back on track thinking like that. You can't get back on track.
You're right. Like, but economics and crime are easy topics to discuss. They are easy topics to discuss. But race relations is not. And it's quite fascinating to me that the two parties who support it, one big time and the other one not so much, simply because it doesn't go far enough, are the two Māori-led parties in Parliament, which is ACT Party and New Zealand First.
Which then brings me to the final paragraph of Bryce Edwards. So there's the whole reason that Bryce is here. Thank you for that, Elliot.
Yeah.
So the, part of the reason, thank you, is two things. I think when it comes to anything Māori, Luxon, is he doesn't know what he's doing. He's like a chook with his head cut off. He is absolutely, when it comes to all things Māori, he is so far out of his depth. And you can see that he has leaned into Winston and David Seymour for that issue. So he's gone and abrogated himself from that. So Bryce, this is what sparked my interest with Bryce's piece on, when was it, 15th. Finally, Seymour's bill is not only treaty principles related, is not the only treaty principles related work underway. Justice Minister Paul Goldsmith is proceeding with the agreement between National and New Zealand First to remove provisions to the principles of the treaty in 28 key pieces of legislation. Goldsmith has indicated that some may have their relevance to the treaty made explicit and others might be scrapped altogether. And I think that's why National have actually stayed out of it. I think in a way they're quite happy for the distraction of the hikoi because they're actually quietly fevering on trying to do even more in very, very specific.
But that's a New Zealand First policy that they're having to implement. So that's not even, have I got that wrong? Is that
No, you haven't got that wrong. But as I said, I think National, when it comes to all things Māori, I mean, they've got Tama Pōtaka, they've got James Meagher, they've got some really good, strong leaders there, but both of those are rookie, aren't they, debutant freshman MPs, you know, so they haven't got sort of, you know, they're not like the, is it, oh, not Georgina, the woman from Taupo who was there for forever, Tuwharetua, who was a national, you know, they don't
Heke
have
Parata.
Those. Hekia Parata. They don't have a lot of that depth on the bench anymore in that space. So I think they're quite happy to abrogate some of that stuff there. Where Seymour is a winner is he knows that there are a lot of really soft national votes.
And he can pick them up.
But the other loser, I think, is Labour. And Marty brought it up in Media Matters yesterday. Willie Jackson. What was Willie Jackson doing running around in a red T-shirt with all the hikoi stuff and all the Labour people are there? I mean, hello, Willie. You've just opened the door to let the fox in the hen house, bro.
Yeah, but they can all be clients later on for the PR business.
I'm being serious. Willie Jackson has said the Māori Party and the Labour's Māori caucus share the same objectives. We just go about it different ways. So, you know, and if you read...
if you were Christopher Hipkins or Labour senior, would you let him say that?
Christopher Hipkins is like howdy doody. He's got the Māori Labour caucus's hand up his bum making his mouth move.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yep.
And I said on Media Matters, you know, a guy like Christopher Hipkins, his natural relationship at school with Māori is to get his head flushed down the toilet by them. You know, it's not a comfortable relationship, and I suspect
that's what he's thinking, you know, of every time, like, he looks at Willie.
I will say that you know, the humorous stuff to the side. I'm Te Atawa Ngāti Raukawa, as well as being Tonga, Niue, and English. I absolutely hate co-governance and what it's done to New Zealand. I hate it. Ever since Finlayson brought out his own law, and then the Ardern years, which just basically shoved apartheid-style policies up the wazoo, we now live in a place where race has become more of an identifier as a Kiwi than most else. My children, they've only just recently stopped this one, and this is because of the coalition, but for years, my children would be able to get operations and treatment over your children simply because my children have Maori blood in them. And it was utterly wrong from the get-go, and we shouldn't be having this. My only issue with the Treaty Principles Bill is, well, one, I'm not a big fan of it being called principles. I prefer it being called articles. But the issue that I do have with it, I support it in general, but my issue is that second part of the principles where it says that if you're, everyone has the same rights, but if your rights, if iwi and hapu rights are more than others, then it has to be under current legislation, as in previously through settlements. I actually disagree. I think that all New Zealanders should be treated equally under the law, and that the content of your character means something, not the colour of your skin.
Yeah, which is what they had in the first draft, and they changed it out of the first draft. So, yeah, I asked David on that, and he was like, no, we were wanting to sort of entrench that, and it's kind of like,
That's going to be work for lawyers, which is what you're sort of trying to get out of in the first place.
The lawyer industrial complex. The LID.
Paul, I just caught your interview with Martima Fox.
Yeah. What?
So, speaking, see, this is not good because it puts my blood pressure up and I'm trying to control my old lady menopausal blood pressure, Paul.
I did an interview on that too. Now, what was the issue?
Martima has applied the sovereign Māori hei whakapūtenga argument, which has been around since I was born.
Yeah.
Okay. But she's gone and reframed the entire argument with critical race theory right down to the straw man arguments within critical race theory. I actually had to put my coffee down and walk away and calm myself down and bring myself back when she literally said that she was sick and tired of teaching people about our history and it was up to you to do the work. Which is just woke 101. Now, I'm not saying.
What am I going to say, though? What am I going to say? You know.
No, look, yes, I get it. But she... The thing, this is just it. It is that reframing. It is the reframing of all of these issues that have been going on since, because let's face it, within Māoridom, Māori and I talk about this all the time, there is not complete consensus within Māoridom. There has never, ever been complete consensus within Māoridom. Not all Māori are down with hei whakapūtenga. Okay?
There's most only aren't. A certain,
yes, exactly. Most aren't. And you know, there were a lot of facts that she threw out there that were incorrect. Like she talked about the Kohanga generation. I was sitting there thinking, gosh, I'd love to get you on with Professor Elizabeth Rata and you two can actually have that out. That would be fun. And then she was talking about how they are the greatest and no one actually knows. Well, funnily enough, there is actually a school that has the very best in education and numbers, and it was in the paper, and it happens to be a Māori school, but it isn't part of the Kohanga network. It's St. Joseph's Māori Girls College.
Right.
And that's part of, you know, and that is a Catholic school based on traditional conservative values. So, yeah, I'm going to stop because I feel a rant coming on.
Well, I want to put out
there was a rant.
The activists used to be about Article 2 breaches. That's absolutely fair enough. These are the property breaches, the ideas that government stole land, yada, yada, yada. Now, that was a valid argument. But this new batch, these new radicals, these extremists, what they want is a change to Articles 1 and 3. They're not really caring about Article 2. Article 1 and 3 is what they want. They want the idea of sovereignty to be what they believe sovereignty to be, and they do want to have different rights than the rest of Kiwis. That's a specific. And so the deception that's going on, Marama, I didn't listen to that, but I'm going to be quite interested. I want to have a listen to your interview. But I've gone head-to-head with these people. They are not talking facts, than, or rather their evidence is made up. It's really been pushing on a thought processes. And these are where you come into, for example, Te Hurihanga Nui. Te Hurihanga Nui is critical race theory that's even now in the New Zealand education system that teaches children, New Zealand children, that they're either Māori, Pākehā, or Tauiwi. They categorise them as such. So this is infiltrated into our education system. And that's why Treaty Principles Bill and these race relations, we need to clean it out. We need to get rid of this extremism, Marxism that's been pushed through our system. I mean, the Ngāi Tahu guy, the main legal guy for that, for Ngāi Tahu, he was on a panel discussion 3 weeks ago regarding socialism and how we need more socialists in their system. He's calling it out for it. And so we have to be aware that what they want is a segregated New Zealand. And they've called for that multiple times. This is the last form of the He Pūpua document, the URNDRIP. They want apartheid-style politics. They want apartheid-style constitutional structure.
Have you got that list handy, Marty?
Oh, yeah. The Te Pāti Māori policies.
Yeah,
no, that was revealed. I mean, we read them out. Establish a Māori parliament, implementation of all Mātike, my recommendations for constitutional transformation, return the foreshore and seabed to mana whenua, return all central and local government land to mana whenua, return all conservation land to mana whenua. I'd take it a step beyond. I mean, you know, there is that group of people have been putting the Mao in Maori, as I like to say. You know, it's the colonization that dare not keep its name.
That's perfect.
But you know, you've got to look at the sickly white academics who've stopped Maori doing the shadow work about slavery, about their terrible. I mean, you know, those guys singing Te Rauparaha's haka. Yeah, read a bit about what that guy did. You know, just a murderous, genocidal. You know, they haven't confronted their shadow on that. You know, we know, hey, shouldn't have.
While everyone else is being told or ordered to confront their shadow.
There's no reason to set them on fire. You know, they haven't done the shadow work on that. And so you read through what Te Pāti Māori want. They want a traditional Māori society where they're the chiefs and non-Māori taxpayers are slaves.
Okay, you know, so what happens, because it's inevitable, you're going to come up, you can wish all this stuff, in the end, and let's hope it's not too hard, you're going to come up against a hard stop.
Yeah.
So then what happens?
Well, it's going to cause, I mean, you know, there's that other dimension to it, which I've spoken about, which is there's an Islamic element to it as well, where, you know, you know, we don't want to talk. You can't talk about that treaty as the equivalent of, you've set a Quran on fire. We're going to burn your bloody embassies down. You know, it's a technique where you just overreact to the slightest slight against you.
Well, if it's so imperfect, surely that's an argument for, okay, back to the drawing board. Here we go. Let's put it humpty back together again. It doesn't work like it did in the late or the mid-1800s anymore. Sorry for all the wishful thinking and sentiment. Back to the drawing board. Let's do something new. No one ever talks about that.
Well, it's a continuation. Like around after the treaty was signed, around the time of the land wars, about 50% of Māori were kūpapa Māori. They were sided with the crown. They're like, hey, we remember the musket wars. Ah, that didn't end well. And there was that Māori tradition where you vanquished your enemies by eating them and turning them into tūtai and then mailing that tūtai to their whānau and say, right, you're beaten now.
There was a mail system, was there?
Of, hey, let's just stop fighting. We'll live under a rule of law. Life might be better for you. That wasn't maybe that just.
I think I actually think that the extremists of today are horrifically disrespectful to our tūpuna, to the chiefs who did sign it. Māori brings up a really good point, is the musket wars. And you could combine all the deaths that New Zealand has had in all the wars. The musket wars was the most murderous and death areas. I'm currently going through a second reading over what exactly happened, and it's quite horrific. They are absolutely disrespecting why the treaty was signed in the first place. So it's quite shocking. It's quite shocking what they're doing. And the fact that we get National Party effectively turning their butt up towards it and saying, nah, do whatever you want. Oh, no, 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 we're too scared to deal with this. We need bravery to stop this racial onslaught from...
How do you take the anger out of it? Elliot and Marie, even, because you mentioned Marama Fox, we talked to, and one thing I picked out, I'm not trying to sort of like pigeonhole her into anything too specific, but she did kind of sound sort of angry to me.
They're extremists.
Comes with the territory.
Yeah, but anger doesn't help trying to do a deal.
No, but no, it doesn't. And I mean, the difficulty that we've had is that we've had during the Ardern years. And I mean, let's face it, in the key years prior to that, you know, I hasten to add too, he was very conciliatory in a number of these areas, but particularly it ramped up during the Ardern years. And they, because they were activists themselves, so then... When you have a faction that's operating off critical race theory, you're working in a social justice world. I mean, potato, potato. So you're going to set all of these things up. One of the points she brought up was around the Te Aka Ai, the Māori health system. Now, that part of the one of the biggest reasons, other than the fact that it's completely separatist and racist, I mean, let's, you know, not split that here, is... It's expensive, and there was already provisions within the New Zealand health system for Māori. Māori receive a massive amount over and beyond their, in terms of percentages, support in the existing health system before that separate system was set up. It's already there. It already existed. There are actually some very good Māori health providers out there. And then there are some what I would call rather opportunist Māori health providers. Think, you know, people that run the Māori Party out there. But they existed. Why do you then have to create another fully separate structure so you can have an entire lot of people in governance just so they feel good because they've got Māori in governments? Of it. You don't need that. It's expensive. That is those are checks that we, as a country, we can't afford to cash, right? Yeah. So it's purely practical. And for her to sort of say, oh, you know, this is a systemic race and this is oppression. One of the big issues, and again, we brought it up in Media Matters yesterday, I have a thing for tēnā ranga tēratanga. Tēnā ranga tēratanga. And again, te whakaputinga, for more or less purposes, that entire point of being a single sovereign person on the land, that sovereignty starts with you.
That An starts Englishman's with home you. Is his castle. The British understanding of that. You can have
But tribalism doesn't work like that, does it?
Well, yes and no. Yes and no, because it still starts...
Well, the personal agency is limited.
Well, no one's personal agency is limited, Paul. No one's personal agency is limited.
Well, your personal agency
no one listens to you because you've got no rank.
If you're constantly being told that everything bad that happens to you is someone else's fault, and that's a dimension of this paternalistic attitude to Māori that's, you know, the unintended consequences, you know, that stops us looking, hey, well, you know, a lot of your problem with your poor health outcomes is you disproportionately don't turn up to appointments.
Well, can I go one layer below that, Marty, is that you eat crap.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with the legal thing.
I might be on the way to solving it right there.
Yeah.
Not everyone, but some.
I've got that, you know, I aspire to the British gentleman culture. So if someone's annoying me to the point where I feel murderous, I'll lose mana if I show my anger, whereas Māori lose mana if they don't appear as angry as possible. So which works better in a routine traffic stop when you've got an ounce of weed in the glove box? Who's going home? Who's going to jail?
Yeah. And I also look at it over the lens because there were actually two protests that went on, right? Look at what happened with the protest from Destiny's Church, and they were wanting to actually celebrate New Zealand sovereignty, you know, New Zealand nationhood. And look how they were treated compared to the Hīkoi. And also look at what is predominantly a Māori congregation that they have up and down the country. And whenever I interact with anybody who Māori or otherwise from that church, I see nothing but community, togetherness, love, manners, grace, faith, discipline.
Yeah,
and I agree with
it
you.
It comes off them, doesn't it? They're just often, in my experience too, beautiful people.
So, and that I think is something faith provides. And when you abrogate necessarily any form of faith, whatever it is, to an ideology, then that becomes a cult. And these activists are living in a cult. Critical race theory is cultish doctrine. It's as simple as that.
It is regressive back to pre-Christian way of thinking, isn't it? Elliot, would you think that?
I mean, yes, hey, being, very specifically being, that.
Turning the other cheek hasn't worked for us. Let's go back to Te Rauparaha.
Well, I it's funny you should bring up Te Rauparaha because my family, we were part of Te Rauparaha's war band. So when you were talking about mass cannibalism feats, slaughter, yeah. pillage, rape, yes, I'm very keenly aware that the land that we have was taken specifically through that. That's yeah. how it was taken.
But no mention kind of that in the grand story. Cause
no, absolutely not. No way.
I guess it gets in the way there.
Mm. Well, Jacinda Ardern stopped it being talked about. She cut off the curriculum after the Treaty of Waitangi.
You mean Jacinda Ardern who didn't know the articles of the treaty?
Yeah,
oh, right. I think, look, we've got that mixture, and Māori says it so well, put the Māo in Māori. So you've got a lot of people who are captured by Marxism spirit. There's you've got a mixture of that and just the most ruthless edge of racism. They're out and proud racists. They really are. One thing I did want to also bring up about the Hikoi was the fact that New Zealand mainstream media, once again, deserved the bottoming out of their trust from public. That they loved them, they were singing songs, they were having joyful meetings, and Marie brought up as well about that the treatment of Brian and the Freedom Coalition's meeting. I went to cover it. I went to take a few videos and do a few interviews. Absolutely wonderful, good people. The mainstream media report on it in a disgusting fashion. Even the numbers, I found it fascinating because when you look at the Hikoi and you look at the Freedom Convoy, the treatment of the Freedom Convoy was treated as rubbish. What was it? You're racists, misogynists, Islamophobics, homophobics. They threw out all of the phobes in the book.
A river of filth.
A river of filth.
Well, that's how he ended it.
And they also actually put out the
It was called violent. It was called violent in the media.
Yeah, I remember
week. Well,
I remember when they were told that they threw acid on a policeman, and then someone's got a film footage of them spraying pepper spray, and it sprays back into the cop's face.
Yeah, and
it's extraordinary.
Cops.
They are,
and then
they
wonder why people get exercised about Rubaskin pouring sauce on Posey Parker. Okay, that could have been acid.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and that
absolutely.
Was someone pouring something on someone else, not this an own goal or a friendly fire. Whatever.
I have to say though, and I didn't catch it in full, Paul, but I heard you talk with Brian about the dropping of the charges at court, and I was delighted with that, especially with what we've gone through. I was really delighted to hear that because
they folded in court, Marie. Folded
I know.
In court.
I got sent some of the transcript, and it. Yeah, well done, Mansfield Casey, because that was masterful. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Mm. Particularly too when they had on record that conversation with Cuddles prior. I mean, wow.
Cuddles. Well, how did he get that anyway? Is that the relationship with Ardern or something?
No, because I think it's his pussy. BLM, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I see that Sir Ashley Bloomfield's involved in some kindness project now. They really rub it in your face, don't they?
God, now I'm dyspeptic.
I'll tell you what, something slightly off it, but linked, is I go around the country and I do things like de-escalations, and I train people on how to do things in safer ways. Interestingly enough, outside of Wellington, that term be kind has become a trigger for a lot of people out there. Like when they hear it, I'm watching visually very visceral.
Well, they
reactions.
Want to throw up. They start dry reaching.
Well, they get angry. They get emotionally a little bit triggered over it. And I'm like, yeah, I get it.
We're coming up against time. We had other topics, but I think we've burned through the time. But I think fair enough, because it needed a good going over both these things.
World War III and Civil War.
There's nothing like a Friday rant. Thanks, Paul.
I always thought that just life would get better.
I'm flying to Auckland now. I can
we'll
start my
day. We'll be fine, Paul. We'll be fine.
Can you guarantee that, Marty?
Yes, because if I'm wrong, well.
We won't know. We'll be all vaporised.
Then we can worry
nuclear
about
mist.
It
And climate change will kill us in 4 years' time. So
there we go. There's always a golden.
It's incredible, isn't it? Wow. All right. Well, thanks for coming on. I think we're going to have to call time. I want to thank Elliot Ikele, conservative commentator, for coming back on. Good to see you again, Elliot. Thanks for coming in.
Loved it. Thank you.
Marty, as always.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Paul. Thanks for having me. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, good to see you. And as always, Marie as well.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.